Welcome to EduMeasure, a podcast for teachers, students, parents, and others concerned with transforming teaching and learning. This podcast explores creative and innovative responses to current challenges in education. We've now launched much of EduMeasure's first season, with 10 episodes produced since the summer, a variety of solo episodes and interviews with students, teachers, and administrators. Today's podcast will be a compendium of three recent interviews, and because of its length, I'm dividing the show into episodes 11 and 12. This show is a variation on the interviews that I have conducted in my previous episodes, shifting our focus on how our students themselves understand the purposes and the value of their college educations. I'm your host, Berent Esterbrook, a professor at a small liberal arts college in Illinois, and today I'd like to present excerpts from these interviews with recent college graduates who reflect upon how best to apply the lessons of a liberal arts education to their post-college lives. In these sessions, we can catch a fascinating glimpse of education as it is understood by the educated themselves. The three students are recent graduates from my own institution. Mr. Adam Enns currently works at Shebe Library as a technical services manager. He received his undergraduate BA from Illinois College in 2017 and is working on his Master's of Library and Information Sciences from Valdosta University. Mr. Matthew Hunter currently works at C2 Solution in Springfield, Illinois, a software startup. He received his undergraduate BA degree from Illinois College in 2018, and he is currently working on his Master's in Communication at the University of Illinois. Mr. Jaden Kasai currently works at Illinois College as an admissions officer. He received his undergraduate BS degree from Illinois College in 2023. My first question to each of them was to what extent they understood their college experiences to be potentially transformational. I asked them what the very best and most effective classrooms looked like. To what degree did their educations achieve this ideal? Each of these former students responded to this question with memories of their own personal and intellectual growth, sharing how their best experiences in college brought both an understanding of their previously unrecognized potentials, as well as a recognition that they were responsible for their own learning.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack. So I'll start with, is transformational necessary? I think for me, that's a very easy answer, yes. If an education isn't transformational, then to me, it's not an education. In my mind, no point in just being what I like to think of as a knowledge sponge to just have these random facts or pieces of knowledge that aren't useful to you in any other way or other than just being there. So that definitely needs to happen. Ideal, yes, I would also say that's a pretty easy answer for me. I think it's ideal that I walk out of any learning scenario, no matter how well I like the class, how much I like the professor, or even the material, it's ideal for me to walk out of a classroom saying, okay, I learned something today that I can think on or at least implement into my life. Maybe it's, okay, that's what I don't want to do, or that's not how I want to phrase things. Or maybe that professor taught in a way that wasn't conducive to my learning, or maybe some of my classmates' learning, so I can learn from that and see differences there and intricacies. But when I was thinking about negativity bias, which is something that interests me greatly because I catch myself in it a lot. And I think that anyone who's aware of negativity bias, which for those who don't know is a cognitive bias for us humans to notice anything negative that happens and to kind of give a visualization, to view that experience as weighing more than any positive experience that we have. So to balance out this one negative experience that we view as this boulder, we need a lot of pebbles of positive experiences. And so I think it's important to recognize the numeracy and not the weight of how these things make us feel. And I think that maybe transformational learning doesn't happen as often, but it does happen quite a bit more than I think we understand. and maybe quite a bit more than some of my professors understood. I definitely think that some of my professors thought, wow, Kasai just walked out of my class. He didn't understand a thing that I just said. I think that every 18-year-old thinks that they have things figured out, and that's very normal, as we know in human development, to kind of reach that level of, okay, especially with our societal standards, especially since we're taught from a young age, okay, you're an adult once you're 18. But what does that really mean? We still don't really know. I don't think anyone has a concrete answer for that. Or maybe individuals do, but our society certainly does not. So it's tough because I think I was a lot more mature than peers in certain ways, but I didn't recognize how much more growth I needed or had yet to undergo until I was walking across the stage receiving my diploma. And that's something that definitely my junior and senior year I leaned into more so. I started to take time to be more introspective and try to be honest with myself, which we can never really do, but to the extent that I could, and trying to figure out what I wanted, what I needed in a certain situation. Did I need to go over today's lesson with Professor Wendell, one of our great faculty members here? Did I need him to re-explain that to me in some other words? And when I started to do these things, I noticed that now I got to focus on some other different aspects of maturity, like, well, you know, college age, young man here, you know, focusing on cooking for myself every night rather than going out and doing some of those things that I think culturally we associate with adult activities. And for me, it was kind of backwards because I think that many of us think that those basic level, if we think about Maslow's hierarchy, which is actually a topic of a lot of debate right now in personality psychology, I think that his hierarchy works for some people. And then for some people like myself, definitely getting those higher, quote unquote, higher order functions out of the way first. And once I'm feeling good, whatever that means in an abstract sense, then I can focus on the day-to-day tasks. And that's helped me a lot, just being more in tune with myself and growing that way in maturity.
You, amongst your cohort, made many safe spaces where learning was invited, not forced. It was something that you asked us to explore at our own pace. Now, at the time, it didn't feel like our own pace. And especially to the wonderful courses I shared with you, I always felt that pressure. But you helped me recognize that pressure was not external. That pressure was coming from within. When a student is asked to engage with themselves in a way that allows them to explore their needs. But just imagine a student walking into a classroom for the first time. Right away, they are inundated with cues that tell them this is a space to either be their best selves or hide so that they can pass the class. They can get through this with as little risk and a little vulnerability as possible. The best classrooms disarm students. They disarm and instigate unlearning of so many habits that we've been forced to adapt just to survive in this day-to-day environment. At the very core of this, students bring the best classrooms with them if they feel they can trust their instructors and their classmates.
For me, in terms of transformational education, I feel like the greatest degree of transformation that I experienced was at the beginning and the end of my college years. I was being forced to evolve beyond my shell that you're so familiar with. I was not a good public speaker at all. I had a very hard time making friends before college because I grew up in a very small high school. So everybody knew everybody. There were probably about 120 kids from in both junior high and high school total. So everybody knew everybody. So I didn't really have to worry about making friends because I knew everybody. The students here came from high schools of thousands, and I came from a school of about 100. So going from 100 to 1,000 was a bit of a shock for me. My first year was more focused on how do I evolve socially, psychologically, rather than through just strict academics. And then as I got older and I was beginning to feel more comfortable with myself and the people around me, I was beginning to feel there were more organic interactions. I didn't have to focus on not screwing up talking to people all the time. And so when I became more comfortable with that, I was able to focus more freely on my academics.
The second question that I asked each of them centered on the lasting effects of what they had learned. What did they take with them after finishing an extraordinary class? And how has their understanding of what they learned in their classes changed over time? As instructors, we know that we sometimes finish a classroom session believing that our students have fully understood an important idea or insight, when in fact, their comprehension was incomplete, taken out of context, or dead wrong. In their responses to this question, these former students felt that their most important insights evolved after careful reflection on what they had experienced, especially when they were able to relate those insights to the circumstances of their lives after graduation.
Well, again, it goes back to the subjective nature of education, both for the individual and the system, because I don't know if you can really truly measure the truly important thing that students have taken away from a specific class. It depends on the subject, depends on the individual, depends on the professor. So, for example, like I said, one of my majors was in English, with an emphasis in creative writing. So I took a lot of writing courses. You know Professor Nick Capo. He's a brilliant writer and a great teacher as well. I thought when I first stepped into his class, I thought I was a pretty decent writer. I've been writing in high school recreationally, and I had been writing a lot in college as well, both fiction and nonfiction. And so I was coming in with a pretty big writer's ego. You can either write well or you can't. And that's how I think that's how all classes really should be. Either you make the cut or you don't. There shouldn't be any half-assing allowed, which I think freshman year, I think, is supposed to help weed that out. I barely survived the first workshop class that I took with him, and then I barely survived the second one that I took with him. But the third one that I took with him, that was probably the proudest A I ever took home. It was an advanced creative workshop. It wasn't just about writing, as it turns out, that it took me forever to learn in the first two courses. It was about the editing. Yeah, I have decent first drafts, but if you don't know how to edit, they're just going to remain just that.
First and foremost, I believe that every classroom offers that engagement. That's not always the case, but it is possible to find that very necessary engagement that a student then is allowed agency. Without that agency, they will always be backseat drivers to their own education. So that is what they need to discover for the first part of that question. The next part, if I'm not mistaken, was how do we measure that?
How do we know that this actually happened? Maybe we'd like to believe that it was a great class when it wasn't.
I'm actually diametrically opposed to this notion of measurements, in the sense that I gave my capstone presentation at this institution decrying the negative effects of the GPA. It is a measurement that takes the responsibility away from a student. It simplifies the unsimplifiable. You cannot trust a number to tell you what you are and not achieving in life. And I made it a very clear point that this burden is what blinded me for the longest time. It's not a coincidence that the grades I received correlate perfectly with when I was learning the most, but it's actually counterintuitive to what you might expect. If you look, my lowest grades were actually my very first and last semesters at this institution, but those were the semesters I let cares fly in the wind. I had nothing but education, engaging, truly learning on my mind. And I still look at those two semesters as the ones that were most formative. Now you might ask, why did I shift back? Well, we can then come back to those social pressures I mentioned earlier. Students nowadays are inundated with something that they have not been trained to manage. And that is not their fault, and it's not the educator's fault either for not recognizing it in its many disguises.
When I saw this question, I was really excited about it, and I had some initial thoughts. So, firstly, I don't know if educators can ever really know what students have learned. And that's the beauty of education and teaching, and it's also one of the more frustrating things about it. I'm also a volunteer assistant coach and have been coaching and mentoring younger athletes on our team for quite some time since I got here. And I've been privy to seeing some of the growth, but it's taken so long for some of these athletes. And I think that serves as a pretty decent allegory in education, where sometimes that seed is planted, but we don't really know what is going to grow or when, or if it ever will. And all we can really do is plant that seed. So as a student, what I think students should take away from a classroom experience, regardless of how you feel about an experience, there should be something that you're excited about, that you can learn from, and that you're excited about learning from and implementing, or at least trying. I think that's the biggest obstacle to students really realizing the value of the classroom, is that trying aspect, because the mass of information that my generation specifically, and definitely those younger than me, have at our fingertips and at our disposal at any time has made it such that we don't have to try to do these things that are cognitively very taxing. I don't have to memorize the presidents of the United States because I don't need to go look, flip through an encyclopedia and go down a list and do all of that mechanical work anymore. I type, you know, list of United States presidents into my phone and I find it. And that's just maybe a more trivial example when we're talking about education at the higher level, but I think that everyone can see how that could, how that mindset could kind of pollute other fields, no matter the depth of concept there. And so I don't know what educators can do to instill the spirit of trying into a student. I know that I've tried as far as athletics, you know, athletically speaking, just getting them to think for themselves, which I think in an educational setting is somewhat diametrically opposed to the results-oriented thinking that students have. They have a letter grade in mind that they would like to get, and they're going to do whatever it takes to get to that letter grade rather than doing whatever it takes to consistently achieve that goal over a long period of time. Thinking teleologically is not the strong suit of many 18 to 22-year-olds. So I think that really defining what an educator can do is emphasize the importance of personal growth through education. Not what can I do to get the grade, but what can I do to better myself holistically over a long period of time.
That completes part one of today's podcast. We will continue my interviews with these students in part two, episode 12. I want to thank my guests, Mr. Matthew Hunter, Mr. Adam Enns, and Mr. Jaden Kasai. As we reflect on what contemporary education means and how it could be improved, I think these former students provide us with a meaningful perspective on the recent past as insiders. They offer us reminders of the value of teaching and learning, insights into both the accomplishments of a good liberal arts education and its, as yet, unrealized potentials. That's all for today's podcast. I'm your host, Bernd Esterbrook, and we hope that you will find the ideas discussed today to offer provocative insights into how our education could be repurposed and reimagined for the benefit of students yet to come. We have just opened our new website, edumeasure.com, where you can comment on what you have heard, suggest new topics, and share materials that explore imaginative approaches to contemporary education. EduMeasure is produced by Ed Leonard and Bernd Esterbrook, with help from our editing and engineering intern, Miranda Araujo. Thanks for listening.